Welcome to another episode of the Faith Work Rest podcast. Our mission is to help people discern their vocations and reimagine their occupation for the good of their neighbor and the glory of God. We're part of the Surge Network. It's a network of local churches united to put Jesus on display in their community. You can learn more at surgenetwork.com. Welcome back to another episode of the Faith Work and Rest podcast. I'm Lauren Kutzko. I'm here with Kimberly Deckel and Jim Mullins. And today, awkwardly enough, instead of interviewing somebody else, we are going to be interviewing me. So, Jim and Kim, Jim and Kimberly, I'll let you guys take it from here.
Yeah, so it was my idea to interview Lauren because you've probably heard his voice if you've listened to this podcast, but you don't know what he does when he's not doing his podcast. He doesn't just do this podcast as the only thing he does, but he does some great work in helping people navigate the big questions of career and potentially entering into the world of entrepreneurship. So we wanted to have a whole episode devoted to getting to know Lauren, getting to know what he's about, getting to know his work, and how he reimagines the work that he does on a daily basis. So we want to just start off by tossing some questions your way.
Yeah. And don't worry, we won't make Lauren ask himself the questions.
Yeah.
So it'll just be Jim and I. So will you just tell us a little bit about yourself, your family, a little bit about your story, just so we can get some background?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm 38 years old. Grew up oldest of four kids outside of Cleveland, Ohio. I now have three kids. I'm married to my wife. Her name is also Lauren. So we're Lauren and Lauren. Met in college at Indiana University. Didn't grow up going to church really, and that happened later on when I was in high school. Became a Christian, got real involved with a campus ministry in college, and then moved out here to the Phoenix area to plant a church with Scott Brown and Becky Brown in 2003, and have sort of been here ever since. That was well before we had kids. Now life looks quite a bit different than it did then.
Where do you live?
Live pretty close to downtown Phoenix, about 2 miles out. It's actually one of the first suburbs of downtown Phoenix. It's called the Coronado neighborhood. It's about 2 miles outside of downtown Phoenix.
That's great. Can you give us your specific address?
Absolutely, yeah.
As well as social security number.
And your phone number and your email.
Yeah. No, we really appreciate you, man. Part of what I want people to do is to get to know you before we start asking questions about the work. I just want to have a little rapid fire round.
Sure.
So I'm going to ask you these questions, and you just give us like a one word, one sentence answer. So, rapid fire question number one: most influential book you've ever read?
Besides the Bible.
Besides the Bible, of course.
Yeah. It's everybody's.
There's a book, kind of obscure. I worked at Food for the Hungry for a long time. So, mm-hmm. This is not one sentence. I'm horrible at this.
That's okay. Roll with it.
White Man's Burden by William Easterly.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That's good.
Oh, you do know it. Okay, great.
Yeah. That's good. Okay. Number two. Most influential relationship other than someone that you are married to or related to or also happens to be the Son of God?
Okay. No Bible. No Jesus. So this is hard. Mm-hmm. I chose Nancy Bartolik. She was a very influential leader in the campus ministry that I was a part of when I was in college.
Mm, that's great. And the next one would be, what's one place, one physical location that has formed you most?
I don't even think this is a city, but there's a province in Cambodia named Chuuk. Mm. And it's pretty close to the ocean, but I would have to say that one.
That's great. And since I know you're a music fan, what's the soundtrack of your life? If you had to have one album that is kind of like the music in the background to the stuff that you do, what is it?
Flood. They Might Be Giants. The Flood album.
That's awesome.
1990.
I know that. We're the same age, so
we are.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Birdhouse in Your Soul.
I'm not sure which. I'm not even sure which is the song and which is the band. Right. But yeah,
that's part of the fun.
Yeah, that's good. I'll go look it up earlier. I will.
It's so embarrassing.
No,
it's
okay. You shouldn't be embarrassed.
No.
I mean, I haven't heard the album. You might need to be embarrassed.
Jim might. Yeah, maybe Jim should be embarrassed.
I love doing this to other people so much more than I like having this done to myself.
No, I hear you. I think everybody kind of has their canon of music that gets solidified in this key era of life.
Yeah.
And then you can add to it, but that core can kind of remain the same. So yeah. That's good.
All right. So moving a little bit into the vocation area, tell us what you've done vocationally in the past, what that looked like for you.
Yeah, so I started working kind of in technology initially. So I worked for an internet service provider when those existed in the late 90s, and then did IT at Indiana University to pay my way through college, moved out to Phoenix, and then stayed in IT for a little while before going over to Food for the Hungry. And then I worked in the president's office and did a lot of board of directors relations and kind of international restructuring stuff. And eventually there was an opening there in IT. And so then I kind of, my career went back to technology unexpectedly and kind of unintentionally. And so I was, when I finished my time at Food for the Hungry, I was the chief information officer. So responsible for all of our technology and all of our 26 countries and kind of work around the world. Mm. That was right after mobile phone apps came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so started working with a company locally. It was kind of a tech startup-y sort of thing. And we had a lot of charity clients. So we worked with International Justice Mission and Compassion International and Focus on the Family to start putting a lot of their content and do a lot of their fundraising onto mobile devices. So we would build mobile apps and websites and things like that for mainly charities, but we also had some fun clients like Tiger Woods and
That's more fun.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, charity can be fun.
That's great.
So what do you do now?
Yeah. So like Jim said earlier, I help people start businesses basically. So it's more complicated than that. But that's kind of in a nutshell what I do is work with people who are exploring entrepreneurship or curious about owning their own business instead of staying in the job market traditionally and working for someone else. I help them kind of sort through that and, like you said, navigate that process.
And what took you from IT and helping develop apps to what you're doing now?
Such a good question. So this is a Faith Work Rest podcast. It's part of the Surge Network.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was 2010-ish that I went through the Surge School and kind of it's close to its current iteration because I've been through it a few times in its development, but went through and quarter four, we haven't talked about this recently a ton, but mm-hmm. quarter four of the Surge School is talking about vocation. And at the time we were leaning heavily on Amy Sherman's book, Kingdom Calling. And we just talked a lot about, I mean, you know, so we're in the fourth quarter of this theological leadership development curriculum. And we're talking a lot about the story of God and the drama of scripture and justification and how individuals change and getting into God's mission and how we're all on mission with God post-redemption, pre-restoration, right? Mm. And how what we do every day, like what we wake up and go to work to do, is sort of God's primary way for us to participate in his mission, which wasn't 100% new, but was still, it still just stirred in me this, and this is pretty tight. So I use a lot of assessments in my work with coaching individuals in career transition, and I can find it. Like I can show you in my assessment how this works out, because this isn't a universal truth. This is just something that I struggled with, was this wrestling that kind of kicked off this wrestling period for me of, I often feel like I'm wasting time. Mm-hmm. But once I started to think about my work day to day as this integral part of God's mission, anytime I started to feel like I was wasting time, really started to bother me. And one of the ways that relates to entrepreneurship is when I was at Food for the Hungry, I would start to see, and we would talk a lot about this, we would do different development programs where we would help not by trying to hand things out to people, but by seeding, using seed capital to help them get businesses going, which would have a huge impact on local poverty in a community. Family poverty, family entrepreneurship was a big positive in those communities. And I also started noticing, especially with my work with Brushfire and in the startup community in Phoenix, that it was similar. So I just started to realize entrepreneurship can play a major positive role in communities because entrepreneurs have agency and autonomy that God's given them over their work to participate in God's mission. So it's somewhat of a logical dance a little bit, but I just really wanted to basically, if people wanted to have a different kind of career where they weren't working for someone else and kind of having someone else be in control of their time and what they did and how they worked and their benefits and blah, 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 which a lot of people want, and that's great, but for people that wanted to have that responsibility and control over their career and then potentially over others to give them a path and help them navigate that path towards it.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So for people who don't know, not everybody knows what a franchise is. Why don't you explain how franchises work and why someone would want to own a franchise?
Yeah, so I didn't necessarily know this either. Mm-hmm. But basically, there's three ways that you can get into business for yourself. And the one that most of us like talking about and the one that most of us like reading magazine entrepreneurship magazines about and, you know, making movies about is sort of the Mark Zuckerberg sort of entrepreneurship, mm-hmm. right? But in business ownership in general, that's kind of like being a professional football player as it is to playing football as a child. You know, it's the very small percentage of entrepreneurs start their own business and raise venture capital and IPO and then, you know, start a fund to give away all their money, you know, whatever, right? Yeah, like that's just very rare. But those are the stories of celebrity entrepreneurship that we love to tell. Most entrepreneurship is small business ownership. And the ways to become a small business owner are kind of the other two. So acquiring an existing business, right? So your parents have owned a restaurant, and so now you're coming into it and then you acquire the business from them, or just somebody you don't know, you acquire the small business from them, you buy it, right? And then the third way is through models where there's a model, but you still have to do the work yourself. So, and these categories are licensing, dealerships, franchises, and things like that. So I still have to do the work of developing the business, finding the customers, running the business, and establishing it. But somebody else has already figured out who's the customer, what's the marketing plan, and how to do the business, and I can follow that. And so what we find is there's, you know, a lot of people that would love to be business owners, but the employment path is more clear, and it's sort of now in society is kind of ingrained in us, right? I go to school, get a job, that's just what you do. The kind of celebrity, fast growth, venture-backed startup is more popular and is more popular and exciting to talk about. And the people that want to do that, they figure out a way and they do it. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of people that want it that would get it if there was a path. And so franchising, sort of licensing the Volkswagen brand and opening a Volkswagen dealership or using the Great Clips model to start a hair salon is a way for them to be business owners.
Yeah. Yeah. So give us a snapshot of what life looks like. And I want to have two archetypal days. Like, what is the great day? Tell us what a great day looks like and tell us what a disastrous day looks like.
So I love having a lot to do. And so a great day in this business for me is having a full calendar of appointments with clients. So I typically have, a dozen clients that are looking at different business opportunities and thinking about opening a business and trying to get their qualify for an SBA loan and pull together all the details. And when I'm kind of bouncing around between all of them, helping them get to the next milestone in their process, I love that. Hmm. A big bummer as a business owner is I've realized in the last 3.5 years that I don't like trying to find new clients. Mm-hmm. So, which is a huge part of any business and it's difficult. And I think part of the reason it's difficult and I don't like it is it feels like an empty calendar. Mm-hmm. It feels like, you know, do you want to go to this event? Do you want to send this email? Do you want to, you know, kind of make these calls? And it's not always clear what's going to be best. And so that's, you know, for me, that's kind of the hard part of business ownership.
Yeah. Walk us through your process. When someone sits down with you and, well, first of all, how do they hear about you? You know, if someone thinks they walk by a Chick-fil-A and they're like, I want to own a Chick-fil-A. Are you like the Chick-fil-A fairy that just appears all of a sudden? Or how do they connect with you?
Yeah, that'd be nice. But it's generally relational. I mean, my kind of, you know, now that we've been in Phoenix for 15 years, you know, generally when people are in transition, I'd say most of my clients are out of work. Mm-hmm. So they're in transition and they've got some time because they're out of work to really do the digging. A lot of times if people are out of work and it's an emergency, they just have to kind of get their paycheck back again, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's not necessarily time to open up the big why questions. So the clients that really get a lot of benefit from working with me are asking big why questions, and they've got some time to really sort through it because it takes a while. It can, and you know, sometimes we say in the industry, you know, it's a full-time job to look for a job. Most of my clients are not necessarily certain that they don't want to work for somebody anymore, but they have this kind of pebble in their shoe, maybe, that they're kind of walking around going, you know, I'm at happy hour with my friends. It's Friday night, and I'm sort of dreaming about that day when we can all open a business together and not really have to work for the man anymore. That kind of thing. We basically just say, is this pebble worth investigating and being curious about and exploring? And so when they do feel open and they want to explore a little bit, like I said, we don't necessarily start with I absolutely will or have to open a business, but we just give them some space to explore that pebble. And so we do that through, I ask a lot of coaching questions. So I use a coaching process to ask them about the pebble, right? Ask them about what they've liked about roles they've played in the past and what they haven't liked and things that if they could never do again in their career, what would they avoid? And then I use some assessments. So we have a relationship with a company in Scottsdale called TTI that puts out some great relationships for evaluating talent and job fit. And we use those to help people understand more about who they are and what they're good at and what drives them and gets them out of bed in the morning. Because usually what it comes down to is people want to wake up every day excited to go to work. And the thing that starts the conversation is that that isn't happening and hasn't been happening for a while. And so what they start to wonder is, if I own my own business, can I start waking up and want to go to work again?
Yeah. So tell us about those assessments. What are the assessments? What do they assess?
Yeah. So the most there's three human sciences that are integrated and built into the primary assessment that I use. It's called Trimetrics DNA. And the first science is the one that most people are familiar with. It's called DISC. And it measures human behavior. There's four areas of human behavior, and that's what that assessment measures. The other science is, so that's how people behave. And then the other science is why people do the things that they do. So there's a lot. Simon Sinek gave a talk, a TED talk, called What's Your Why? Why became very popular in the past few years, and it is really important. So we want to give people an objective way to measure it. So there's basically 12 primary things that motivate people, and so we measure that, and we help them see, oh, that's why I've been doing it that way. That's why I feel more alive when I do those kinds of activities than when I do those kinds of activities, because those are my drivers. And then the third thing is skills. How we behave and why we do the things we do aren't really up to us. They're kind of given to us. And certainly there's some nurture involved, and they change as we mature and develop and things like that. But generally, you can't really kind of wake up and say, I'm going to change the way that I'm wired. Our skills, on the other hand, grow and develop all the time. So there's 25 personal skills or soft skills. So not, are you good at changing a tire? Are you good at, you know, free throws? Those are hard skills. So we measure soft skills. So everybody has some level of goal orientation, some level of interpersonal skills, some level of project management. And so we measure the degrees, and we put that list of 25 into priority order, and we really focus on the top seven. And those are your primary competencies that we want to incorporate into what you're doing. Or if you want to do something different, we want to know that you need to develop a different set of seven top skills, because you can change your skills.
Yeah. Interestingly, those are the assessments that we use for the Faith, Work, and Rest coaching, because we have Lauren here, and he's our gateway into that. But if someone is thinking about, how do I potentially step into this entrepreneurial space, and they want to meet with you, how do they go about doing that?
It's all just very conversational, relational. So I have a pretty straightforward link to my calendar. Usually we'll get on the phone for 20 or 30 minutes, and I'll ask some questions like I was just talking about. And then pretty quickly we can decide, you know what, let's get together and talk a little bit longer. Or, you know, that it really doesn't make sense. They're looking for something different.
Is there a website or an email, or do they have to just like look at a mirror and say franchise three times?
Works, ironically. No, you can go to my website. It's just my name, laurenkutsko.com, LaurenKutsko.com.
Are you sure they won't come across your wife's website?
It's possible.
That's why the spelling is important.
Spelling is very important.
Does she have a website too?
She does.
Yes.
Don't you have a website?
My question is,
I don't have a website. I mean,
there you go. I mean, I don't have one either. I mean, I was, you know, I'm kind of curious why you just didn't go all the way and name all of your kids Lauren.
Yeah,
it's a George Foreman a style.
Was it at least a consideration?
He's like, I'm asked this
question. And then finally, I mean, just can you walk us through the steps in the process? If someone begins to meet with you, what's the process that they go through, the steps?
Totally. Yeah, so the first step is really kind of goal setting. Mm-hmm. So what are your goals for your life? How do those matriculate down into the goals for your career? And then what kinds of career options will help you to accomplish those goals? So the first one's goal setting. Mm-hmm. And then the second one is, and this is where we put most of the time in, is looking and finding opportunities that we didn't really ever know existed or haven't explored before. And we go and we explore those opportunities.
Yeah. Yeah. And so if people are thinking about making a career change, what do you think are the most important questions that they need to be asking and wrestling with?
The biggest thing is we are all stewards, right? So the main thing that we're all called to do, when you think about the parable of the talents, right, is not waste the things that we have inside of us when we are blessing the people around us, our neighbors, our cities, our communities. And so I really think the first thing you've got to do is understand what exactly, kind of take inventory of what it is in particular, because it's not the same for everybody, right? So there's certain things that we all share 24 hours in a day, right? So time is kind of this equalizer, but the skills that we have, how we're wired, the financial resources that we have, they're all different. One of the really cool things about business ownership is you really can chart the way that you are sacrificing things like financial resources for the sake of other people, because it's one of the primary things that's measurable when you're looking at your business's performance. When you're an employee, you know, you get a paycheck and you can kind of set aside a little bit for a tithe, things like that, which is obviously really good. But as a business owner, you can literally say, I'm going to do that with 90% of everything. Mm-hmm. Or I can give away the time of all of my employees. And, you know, a lot of businesses will basically let everybody volunteer. Or you can write charitable donations into employees' benefits. So you can do all these different things as a business owner that you can't really do with your company's resources as an employee.
Mm. That's good.
Thanks for explaining that. I think there's a lot of details to what you do. And so hearing you kind of walk us through it is really helpful. If you had to stop and imagine designing a one-day retreat for people, helping them to discern what they should be doing with their life, what would that look like, and what would you recommend that they do?
That's a good question.
It's a creative gym question.
So first, I would have them stop using the word should. Mm. So I don't need to go, you know, to therapy on you, but, you know, what do people say? Stop shooting on yourself.
Yeah.
So the question is phrased, you know, what should they be doing with their life? And if it's true, if what we're talking about is reality, God has created the world, the universe, and put his people in it to bless and redeem and participate in what he's doing. What do we get to do?
Hmm.
What is God's mission? What is he doing? And how do we participate in that? Hmm. And words like should and kind of good and bad, they'll start to, sometimes in the job market and career, they'll start to make people think, well, you know, my grandfather was a pastor, my dad was a pastor, so I'm going to be a pastor. Yeah. My family's always, you know, done shoe repair, so I'm going to do shoe repair, right? Like, it should. Or, you know, you look around and you go, the best thing for me to do is be a lawyer or run the family landscaping business. I think it's just, it's a unhelpful question in some ways. Hmm. On the other hand, some people don't get to ask all of those questions. Mm-hmm. So some people are never going to go on a day-long vocational exploration retreat, right? So the other thing that you know, we really want to do is, on the one hand, not elevate this kind of entrepreneurship that we're talking about, where we're talking about Inc. magazine covers and things like that, but also recognize that the guy that's standing outside of North High School, where we live, that my kids always want to stop by and get a snow cone, he may be an entrepreneur. He may own that. And so there's a kind of entrepreneurship that is still entrepreneurship, and he's still able to provide for his family and sort of do a lot of the things that are his goals because of that, or maybe he feels stuck there. So you just really can't kind of generalize too much, but I've gotten on a tangent. So first of all, stop saying should. The second thing I do at the retreat is I'd encourage people to retreat. I mean, go somewhere that feels away. Mm. And that's a little bit different for everybody, but I would do it where I can, you know, see the peaks of mountains, be under the shade of trees, and hear the running water of a creek or river. Mm-hmm. I take a friend. So don't try to do this stuff alone. I think that's another big thing. So you want to be in intimate conversation with God, the Holy Spirit, in prayer while you're doing this stuff. That's the fourth thing. But I think having a human relationship with you, especially somebody that can detach emotionally from your situation.
Yeah.
So it's good. It's so not your spouse.
It's in addition to your spouse, right? Yeah. It's like that person's there with you.
Yeah.
But take somebody different.
Not somebody who's trying to actively hire you.
Right, yeah. Don't go on a what should I do with my life retreat with your boss.
Right? Yeah.
Five, I would do something physically exhausting.
Mm.
So there's a lot of stuff coming out now too about how you can't really separate what's going on internally with what's going on physically, kind of the psychosomatic stuff. I like getting physically exhausted in the process of exploring things that you care about and what's important to you. So getting away physically exhausting yourself, not for the whole day, but for part of it. Obviously, that's going to be different things for different people. Mm. Taking a nap sometime in the day, you know, really incorporating some real rest, I think would be really good. And then to get practical, it's important to pick a time frame. So it's almost impossible to talk about this stuff when you don't know the when.
Hmm.
Are we talking about during retirement? Are we talking about in the next 3 weeks?
Hmm.
So generally in my coaching of people, we're talking about 3 to 5 years. Okay. So I like to get more near term than these things that we often talk about when we're talking about financial investment, which is, you know, if I put my money in the stock market for 30 years, then the best performing thing over the course of the history of the stock market is the stock market, right? Like, but what about the next 3 to 5 years? I mean, God's called you to put your time and energy and maybe your financial resources into something. So let's look at near term, but not as near term as if I get a job, I'll get a paycheck in 2 weeks, right? So somewhere in between those two things, what's the time frame? Define your win. So we got to know for you, what is this vision that you're trying to accomplish? And so that's why the first phase of the coaching process that I'm doing with clients is let's do some brainstorming on what your goals are. Then we're going to do some brainstorming on what the possible paths are to get to that vision. And then let's have a plan B. A lot of the reason, frankly, that people open their own business is because the plan A that they've been on for the past 25 years working for a Fortune 500 company, when the millennial group grew so big, they can... Now those companies can hire, you know, three millennials for the amount that they were paying the sort of inflated salary executive that's 55 years old. So a lot of the reason people are starting a business is it's actually their plan B, not their plan A.
Hmm.
So kind of knowing the vision, knowing the path to get there, and then also knowing what your plan B is if you need to pull the draw cord on the parachute.
Yeah, there you go.
Is good. And then finally, that friend that you brought with you, I would ask them to check in with you in a week.
Yeah.
You know, say, hey, we did all this stuff. We did all this work. Will you hold me accountable?
Yeah.
Because honestly, the biggest thing that stops people from doing something that gives them more control and responsibility over their career is fear.
Mm.
And so if you spend this day kind of dreaming and envisioning what could be different if I take this agency and autonomy that God's given me and calling me to participate in the creation and cultivation of his world, and you get some clear ideas and you get some excitement, and then you go back to your daily life, you get afraid.
Yeah.
And so you don't do it.
Absolutely. That's good. That's stellar advice. I mean, I almost want to go through some career transition just so I can have a day like that. I mean, that is stellar advice. Well, why don't we close with this? I want to ask a few questions from a 40,000 foot reimagining entrepreneurship perspective. So as we've talked about in the past, we can look at every aspect of life through a certain lens, through a certain story that gives that thing meaning and definition. And ultimately, what we're proposing is that the biblical vision of life is the richest vision of the world, and that we need to reimagine all aspects of life in light of that. So we're going to just do that a little bit with entrepreneurship here.
Okay.
So the first question is, how does entrepreneurship, an activity that displays the character of God, and what aspects of God's character are displayed through good entrepreneurship?
So creation, the first thing I think of is Adam and Eve were entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
They did not work for someone else other than God.
Yeah.
Right? So God said, I'm inviting you into this process of cultivating the garden, mm-hmm. and you're responsible for the parts that I'm delegating to you. You have agency and autonomy over the parts that I'm delegating to you, like naming the animals, for example.
Mm-hmm. Mm, that's good.
Yeah.
What industry were Adam and Eve in?
Well, they were responsible for everything, so it's hard to find one. You know, it's like that was the origin of all industries.
They were the entrepreneurs. Yeah.
That's a good question. Was it an agronomy or was it hunter-gatherer? It may have been.
They weren't
hunting. Before the fall, they weren't killing any animals. So
that's right.
It was more of an agronomy, I suppose.
Yeah, God gave the seeds and the green leaves for the food. So they were basically into vegan food production.
But
probably may not have had the tools to make a Boca burger.
That's right. Eventually, the potential of the Boca burger. Can I rant real quick?
Please.
Okay.
Not if it's going to be mean things about people who don't eat meat.
Oh. It's not going to be mean. It's going to be a stellar point about it. Okay. I have all the respect in the world for vegans, mm-hmm. right? I really do. I genuinely do because I believe in stewarding the earth, and I think that can be a helpful thing. Good, healthy meat production and practices can do the same. But I saw something in the store that was called Beyond Meat.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Have you ever heard such presumptuous title? Look,
fantastic. Did you taste it?
Is it Beyond Meat? Is it Beyond Meat?
I don't know about Beyond Meat, and I don't really eat meat.
You don't know about Beyond Meat?
I don't think I do.
You don't think you eat meat?
No. I don't think
you should probably know.
I don't think I know what Beyond Meat is.
Yeah.
What store did you see it at?
Oh, I think it was Whole Foods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
What is it?
Well, apparently, it's something that goes beyond meat. Tell us what it is.
Yeah, Lauren, educate us.
Well, I'm gonna totally botch this, but they've somehow basically replicated the building blocks of meat in a warehouse.
Is it like what they make the Impossible Burger out of?
I think it's maybe similar. Like that. Yeah. Okay. So look it up. That was a horrible explanation, but it tastes really good. And it doesn't taste like fake meat. It tastes like meat.
I mean, and there are arguments about, right, not just like in terms about how not eating meat is better for the world. You know, not just for the animals, but it's better like economically, and it's better for the environment. So I don't know, maybe that's beyond meat, and eventually it's all we'll get to eat. I don't know. So
yeah, this may be a different
get used to
podcast,
it.
But
I don't know. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
I mean, one of the it's easy to sit in upper class, wealthy parts of Arizona talking about the foods we choose not to eat. You know,
yeah.
I mean, like that was one thing with we'd be visiting a family in Chuuk, Cambodia, mm-hmm. when I was with Food for the Hungry, and we'd be like sitting there cross-legged, on the floor of this hut, and then, they bring out food to share, and they've, cut mm-hmm. or killed a goat that, they've been saving for some special occasion, and then, like, I'm the special occasion, and I'll be like, oh, no,
right.
No, thanks.
It's a privilege to
meat.
Be able to choose
yeah,
and to have beyond meat as an option.
Totally. Yeah. No, because here's the thing that I was saying with that is that I don't think you need to make the argument of beyond meat as mm-hmm. if as if vegetables are a bad thing.
Right, they just have vegetables.
They are glorious. Yeah, you don't need to pretend that a tomato and some tofu is a steak, because a tomato and a tofu is something that God says is very good.
What is a tofu?
Well,
tofu
is the soybeans cultivated into meat-like substance.
I don't know about tofu.
I love tofu.
I'm not a tofu.
I love it.
Now,
I'm not kidding. I love
really?
It. Yeah. So there's another thing on the list. Have you eat some tofu, both of you? That's really good.
okay.
Sure.
Man.
I'm still looking for
I'll
that.
Eat anything that's really good.
Even if you just have tofu and Thai food, do you guys like Thai?
Oh,
all right, here's my assignment. Before the next meeting, I am going to eat some Beyond Meat.
While you're running?
While I'm running.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
If you're running really far, you should eat a little bit while you're running. I'm going to bring us Thai food for lunch next week.
So, now you're talking.
So Kimberly, I'm imagining that you have like bags of tofu for like when you're on your long runs. You're just reaching in,
so gross.
Taking a glob of tofu.
I mean, it's not good raw, but I don't know. I mean, I really like tofu.
Yeah, I like it in pad thai.
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
See? It's good.
All right. Some nice I'm sorry. I've taken us way off track.
You have.
From Adam and Eve and their vegan food entrepreneurship to the fall. So I almost led us into the fall with my distracted ADD mind, but we're back. And so tell us about how entrepreneurship, how the fall gives us a lens into understanding what's happening in entrepreneurship. So how has entrepreneurship been affected by the fall? What are the idols that are present and influencing entrepreneurship? And how can it be used to harm others, whether intentionally or inadvertently?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And in some ways, it feels kind of obvious, right? I mean, like our examples of how entrepreneurship, business ownership can harm other people. We have more examples of that in some ways than we do the alternative. So an overemphasis of power and using that power to harm people. Even when you think about the industrial age, so the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, before there were things like employment protections and child labor laws, and a lot of our current existence with employment came out of this time when basically the powerful could start and own and run businesses and exploit labor. Mm-hmm. Slavery is another example of that, right? I mean, yeah. Of course, so taking profit and elevating it to the highest purpose of business ownership to the point where you elevate it above serving the community, serving your neighbor, right, is when you get into a major problem. And that's a huge result of the fall. And then I would also say, so I tend to think about it as kind of the category, the big category is work, and entrepreneurship is one subcategory, and employment is the other subcategory. And I feel like the other way that that's really been broken, at least today's day and age, is that employment has turned into this manipulated thing where a lot of people think they deserve it. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, you don't see that in the creation account with Adam and Eve. You don't turn this thing that we get to do into one of the ways that society is supposed to put money in my pocket so I can go to the grocery store and take care of my family. Like, that's not employment either. That's the brokenness of employment. So there's a lot of brokenness in work. I mean, it's the first thing that broke. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one of the very first parts of the curse was work-related.
Yeah, yeah. Well, even what comes to mind for me is Genesis 4. When you get into Cain and Abel, and the first deep human conflict other than Adam and Eve and them blaming each other for the fruit catastrophe is work-related. Mm-hmm. Cain and Abel are going out into the fields and doing the good work that God called them to do, and it ends up in murder.
Yeah. Yep.
The work gets distorted so quickly.
Yep, it is. And that's the sea that we're living in every day. And I think that's why this podcast is important. I mean, that's largely why we started to do this, right? Why a focus on work? Because so many of our examples of brokenness in the world are work-related.
Yeah.
People feel like they have to go. They don't want to go. It's resulting in murder. They feel like they're entitled to it.
Right.
You know, none of this is what God was designing work to be like.
Yeah. And so looking through the lens of redemption, how is Jesus the good news to those problems that you just explained?
Yeah. So I tend to see two major errors when it comes to idolatry with work. And one is overwork and one is underwork.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll try to do both of those. And I'm just, you know, copying all this, like everything I've ever said that was smart from Tim Keller. But
and don't worry, he copied it from someone else.
Right, totally. So my tendency is to overwork. And so the message that I don't need to work longer and harder to redeem myself or to justify myself because Jesus has finished the only work that I need to be done for me on the cross on my behalf so that I then get to experience all the blessing and benefit of being a child of God, that good news then is the thing that allows me to be like, it's 5:30, dinner's coming up, I'm going to go home and put pause on this because I am not responsible for keeping the world spinning. That's how I can Sabbath one day a week, is because Jesus has finished the work for me. On the other end of the spectrum, there's a lot of people that have a different idol with work, which is that they would never work if they didn't have to. They didn't have to earn a paycheck. But that's not part of what Jesus accomplished either. Yeah. The reason that he died and finished that work was so that we could go do the works that he had prepared in advance for us to do. And so You don't want to fall on either end of those, and Jesus answers both.
Absolutely. Last question. How can entrepreneurship be an act of loving and serving your neighbor? And I know you've hit on a lot of this, but I do know that people still use the word just. I'm just a franchise owner. I'm just a small business owner. And they look to other, they look to their free time, they look to volunteer opportunities to love and to serve others. But the work that they are doing, the entrepreneurship, the businesses that they've started can actually be a channel for that. And what does that look like?
Yeah. I mean, this is a big reason why we include reimagination of occupation into the mission of the Faith Work Rest Initiative. And it's hard not to just refer back to the interview with Phil Thomas at Chick-fil-A, because we have a tendency to think of our work a lot as just this thing that we go do to earn a paycheck.
Yeah.
But what if running a chicken business was a way to bless your neighbor? And those neighbors are customers and employees and vendors and all of it, right? What if being a physician isn't the thing that I did because my mom was a physician and her mom was a physician, but because it's actually the way that I can heal physical brokenness in the world?
Mm-hmm.
So the reimagination of who gets served, and I just think that's a direct impact on so many people by owning a business that serves your customer, but not only your customer, your employees. And so you get the ability to do that.
Kimberly, I know you've worked with a lot of entrepreneurs.
I have.
What else would you add to that about how entrepreneurship can be a means of loving your neighbor?
Yeah, so I think some of it is kind of expanding a little bit upon some of what you guys touched on. So even, you know, when I worked with entrepreneurs at Hustle Phoenix, we were talking about entrepreneurs who are underserved, entrepreneurs who typically come from more urban communities. And so oftentimes for them, the messages have been, you know, I'm just this or just that, and kind of to minimize what they're doing. And I think when I think of some of those entrepreneurs, even in businesses that we might not think about that could really like serve and bless people. I actually had the privilege of taking them through a book study on the book Work Matters.
Mm-hmm.
And so even with that, like helping them to kind of reimagine and think about some of the things that are kind of mundane. And with that, with the entrepreneurs in Hustle Phoenix, a lot of them are working a 9-to-5 type job, right? And then also working on creating their business. And I think obviously that can become really exhausting too. But just watching kind of their wheels turn and think about how they could really reimagine the work that they're doing in that kind of 9-to-5. So we had one woman who worked for the teachers union kind of through the like Red for Ed movement.
Mm-hmm.
And so for her, she was having days where she was so exhausted doing that and sometimes feeling kind of just drained. Mm-hmm. And then also in the evenings coming to Hustle Phoenix and going through classes for her amazing gourmet waffle cones. And so kind of helping her think through the way that she was blessed to be a blessing to those teachers and helping them through just a really pretty kind of crazy exhausting time. But then also, I mean, waffle cones, it's easy just to kind of think, well, they're just waffle cones. I mean, where's the significance in that? But for her, so much of it came down to personality too, and just kind of the warmth that she exuded and the impact that she had on someone that she was maybe just, you know, just selling a waffle cone to, but just the lasting impact and having that interaction with her.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Waffle cones can truly be a gift.
I mean, I think so.
Well, yeah. I'm fairly certain that at Jesus' first miracle at the wedding, in addition to making wine, he probably also made some waffle cones.
I don't know if that's true, but I would like to believe it is.
Right. So. Well, and speaking of employment, Jim can get fired for heresy, and I can't. So.
That's true.
You can take the risk.
Yeah. Well, that's it. That's all that we have for today. It has been good to hear from you, Lauren. We appreciate you and value you a ton, both in the entrepreneurs that you coach and that you help, and in the way that you coach and guide people through faith, work, and rest. And we just want to encourage you, if you want either types of those coaching, to either to visit Lauren's website. What's the website again? It's your name, but can you spell it out?
Loren. Kutsko.
And we'll reference that in the show notes, or you can go to faithworkrest.com to get some vocational coaching, and we'll look forward to connecting with you next week.
Just a reminder, today's music is by Artificial Christian. You can find out more about Faith Work Rest at faithworkrest.com. Also more about the Surge Network there. And if you're interested in getting involved on the prayer team, sharing with us stories about your faithful vocation or reimagined occupation, or signing up for some vocational coaching, you can do that there too, faithworkrest.com. Until next time, have a great week.
Imagine that Aleppo was vacation cool, and all them prison buildings were vocation schools. Imagine that we sip the finest water that exists, and it ain't from Poland Spring, nah, it's more like Poland Flint. Imagine politicians with the different views, all coming together every night, the news. Reports on the beauty of creation, not the mess. Get calls from IRS just to deter to how you're blessed. The pain from autism all replaced by more wisdom. The lame hit the dance floor, moving on rhythm. And no stores closed, no, we're cutting more ribbons. And all them strip clubs become museums just for women.